Welcome to High Tide, Low Tide, the podcast where we talk about all things mental health and where we share our stories with the knowledge that it could just be the lifeline of hope for someone who is hurting and afraid that they're the only one. I'm your host, Lisa Scanlon, and I am so glad that you're here with me today. Just a little reminder here, guys, that we are discussing mental health in this episode, so we may touch on things like suicide or self-harm, which may be a trigger for you. As always, I'll pop resources in the show notes or know that you can call Lifeline 24/7 on 13 11 14. Hey guys, and welcome back to High Tide, Low Tide. I am joined today by a new wonderful guest. His name is Mark Cohen. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Very excited to have you here. We're doing some fun indoor activities today because it is pouring with rain in Adelaide.
Which is rare for Adelaide, so.
And for this time of the year, we shouldn't really be having it, but, you know. And you've travelled here from Aldinga today.
I did. I drove up the coast. I live down the coast by the beach down there near the Aldinga scrub. So it's a place of heaps of birds, heaps of kangaroos, nice beaches, a few vineyards. Yeah, it's beautiful. I love it.
Beautiful. And you have your own business, which is called Restored Connection.
I do.
Lovely. Can you just give us a little bit of an insight into that?
Yeah. So Restored Connection was something I started a year and a half ago. I've been a youth worker for probably 8 to 10 years and working with young people and largely in schools. But I wanted to go, how can I work with families, having mum, dad, children sitting around the table, around supporting their journeys through the teenage years, the ups, the downs, the good things, the bad things, and how to keep, families connected and talking and communicating and navigating those challenges in a probably a healthy way rather than a negative way.
That's awesome. And I think that, like, if I consider myself, I'm now 36 and I'm still learning better ways to connect and better ways to communicate. And so just because someone is a parent doesn't mean that, you know, they also don't need to, you know, hone in on those skills as well.
100%. They might have their own hang-ups from their own teenage years. They can be pretty definitive things that happen in those, age 10 to 18, years of age. Things that happen there can stick with you and can inform your parenting now from your children. So that's a big thing. And certainly working with parents around what are their reactions to when their children trigger them, annoy them. Unpack them, talk about it, explore it. Yeah, it's important.
That's awesome. And we will talk a little bit more about that later in the episode. Yeah. But tell me a little bit more about you outside of Restored Connection.
Yeah. So I grew up in Adelaide, in the western suburbs, with loving family, two older sisters, sort of wandered around through my 20s. Now I work in a high school as well, doing as a well-being youth worker in a large public school, and which certainly keeps me busy.
I can imagine.
Wow. It's exciting. Yeah. Lots of opportunities, headaches, challenges. That's obviously one thing I do, and it's certainly fun. I love gardening. I play in a band down south as well with my cousin and a couple of mates.
I heard it was Aldinga's third best band.
Well, I reckon there's talk
self-proclaimed?
Absolutely self-proclaimed. But I think we might be the second best.
Okay.
Like we've been for 4 years now, and we sort of recently played a really nice gig, and it was like a bigger crowd, and we're like, we could be onto something here. And it's fun. But yeah, I don't know, we enjoy it, and if nothing else happens out of it,
yeah,
I don't really care.
But yeah.
If people are having a good time and there's a few toes tapping and a few people dancing, sweet.
Amazing.
Winning.
Love that.
Love gardening. Love the community down there. That's probably what really draws me down there. There's such a rich, strong sense of connection, sense of love of the land and the country down there. Lots of wineries, in the Wollonga Farmers Market, awesome beaches.
Yeah, the beach is restaurants, gorgeous at Aldinga.
It's lovely. It's it's a popular spot.
I know. I would like, that's like almost like dream tier for me to live down there.
Same. It was my dream tier. And so we pinch ourselves when we can get up and just walk down to the beach. Yeah, it's amazing. And, yeah, it's the people that make it, though. And it's drawn. Yeah, the people that are drawn down there, often there's that creativity, that zest for life. Yeah, it feels a really healthy place to be.
Yeah. And I believe you're also a group, a member of a men's group down there.
I am, yeah. So I've been a part of the Southern Men's Group, which started in probably 7 years ago down in Port Wollonga with a mate, Juan. He certainly wanted to gather a bunch of blokes together just to chat about their lives, not offer solutions or try and fix things. And that's been going 7 years strong. We've now got the Southern Men's Gathering, which comes out of it, where we gather each year down at Yankalilla. We gather 40 to 50 men. They come from all over Australia. And we just have a check-in. What's happening? What are the challenges? Some men will share their stories, and really like powerful stories. And we support each other through that. And the youngest is, you know, probably early 20s and men into their 80s. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And it's that sharing of stories that is the power. To me, it's been the difference in my life, that how I've managed to navigate my own mental health and my own well-being is having that. That's been a bedrock, like an absolute bedrock.
Yeah. I think definitely having that safe space to be able to just share, you know, what's on your mind or what you've been going through, and be held and supported without any judgment or, and often, as you mentioned, not necessarily looking for answers, but just a space to be heard. I think that's super important, and super important also in within men.
Men especially. From what I've observed, women are great, or it's a strength to gather in groups and share openly, vulnerably. It's a strength. Blokes can do it and are good at it. It's just how do you create that safe container to do it in. And there are so many organisations that are doing really good jobs at gathering that. And it might be we put on a free barbecue, have some beers, and we're going to listen to someone, you know, share their story.
Mm-hmm.
It can be as simple as that. Men shed. There's a lot of walk and talks. Men gather and just go for a walk.
Yeah, well team.
Well team. Yeah, I've got a mate who's a member of well team.
Nice.
Loves it.
Yeah.
And it's a simple thing, but there's an intention behind it to let's actually get beyond the surface bro talk around, hey, what's actually going on? And that's the secret. And often if there's a man that is brave enough to take you there or to lead with his story, then men just want to share their challenges because there's not a lot of spaces to do it, and men want to do it.
Yeah. I definitely feel like I've seen an increase in spaces being provided, and like Breakthrough Foundation do one also, who I work with, and it's just very encouraging to see that because it's obviously very needed.
So needed. And if men can have spaces to own their stuff and sit with their emotions, they're going to do less damage to themselves,
mm-hmm.
and certainly they're going to do less damage to the relationships they're in, the families they're in, the communities they're in. So it's only a win-win for me. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So obviously today we're going to talk through your story and your journey, and we'll start off there and see where that takes us.
Mm.
So everyone has a mental health story one way or another. For you, if we were to take it back to the start, what would that look like for you?
Yes, the start, like the very start, was certainly my father being diagnosed with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in year 10 at school, or just finished year 10. So I was 16, on top of the world, you know, bulletproof, had good mates. I think I had my first girlfriend around then. So I was on top of the world. And then, one day mum called all of us kids in and sort of dad was in there and her dad was crying and I was like, oh, something's going on here. Dad doesn't normally cry. Mm. And, yeah, we found out that dad had cancer. Mm-hmm. So that was obviously a shock to a 16-year-old's system. I handled it, I think, pretty well at that time. Mm-hmm. Certainly there was some optimism at the start that, yeah, we can operate and chemo and get a handle on things, mm-hmm. but very quickly realised that this was terminal. So from the day he was diagnosed to the day he died was 2 months.
Wow.
So,
yeah. That is quite fast.
Rapid. Yeah. Rapid. And in some ways, when I think back, I feel that's a blessing in some ways, that there wasn't as much pain and suffering.
Yeah.
You know, there was enough in that 2 months to have an impact on everyone. But mm-hmm. it wasn't a drawn-out process and Dad was in peace, you know, resting well. So that was certainly the starting point. Yeah, I did a brilliant job at just, yep, fine, yep, good, mm-hmm. yep, my dad's died, whatever, keep going, I need to get through year 11 and year 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really good. Mm-hmm. I was great. And then I hit the first year of uni and the wheel started to get wobbly and then the wheel started falling off and I had no idea mm-hmm. what I was feeling. Like it took my sister to say, hey, Mark, you don't look right. You don't look well. Something's changed. Your behaviour's changing. You're not reaching out to your mates as much. You're isolating yourself at home. What's going on? And I was like, I'm fine. Mm. Don't be stupid. Yeah, the red flags were huge red yeah. ones and my sister was clearly looking at them, but I was oblivious.
Yeah, and often, and that's similar in my case in that I didn't know anything was wrong until my mum pointed it out. But often that can happen because it happens so slowly and progressively over time. And, you know, we're not dealing with things that came up and we just keep going. And, you know, I think, like when I think about it, I'm so grateful to have had someone to point that out. Do you think that in that time after your dad passing and you were feeling, oh, you know, I'm fine. Do you think you were compartmentalizing or were you trying to, like, keep it together for everybody else's sake? Or how do you think you managed to do that?
I think my priority was just, I just need to get through school. Like that mm. was, like I was 16, so mm. I had no concept of where I was going to go in the future. Mm. I mean, I did, but it was very loose. And everything was tied up with, you know, hormones and yeah. school and parties and this is the funnest time of my life. So I couldn't piece apart what part of it was grief and what part of it was just the teenage experience. But mm. I was certainly aware of just sort of pushing it to the side and almost saying all the right things. But and I actually think I was fine. There wasn't any negative behaviours. I didn't have any unhealthy coping strategies mm-hmm. at that stage. So it was sort of, I was actually ticking all the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
But it just came out pear-shaped 3 or 4 years. Well, actually, for probably 10 years it came out pear-shaped. Uh-huh. So essentially I just, yeah, delayed it mm-hmm. and then really had a bumpy part of my 20s. My entire 20s really in, mm-hmm. in many ways was up, down, good periods, dark periods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how, like when you said your sister started to notice some changes, what were the main things that she had started to see? Because I think it could be helpful for someone listening who might then be like, oh, actually that sounds like my friend or my brother or...
Yeah. And for me, it was those changes in my behaviours. Mm-hmm. So once I would ring up mates, I'd catch up, I'd go and play soccer. All of a sudden I was answering the phone less. I was mm-hmm. reaching out less to friends. I was isolating myself
mm-hmm.
a lot more. That's probably the one thing that is my... Whenever I get wobbly, I will isolate. It's mm-hmm. almost like I've slowly pushed people away. And luckily I had a good couple of mates that would... They were persistent. They'd mm-hmm. always be calling in, always be checking up. And to this day, I'm so thankful for them. They didn't just go, man, Mark's hopeless, what a stupid friend. Mm-hmm. They never gave up on me. which was an amazing thing. And we're still friends to this day.
Yeah.
So they were the two really obvious ones that people would have noticed from the outside. But I also probably could have gone, you know, to a party or caught up with people and just put on this mask,
yeah,
this front. Yeah, I'm good. Made an excuse why I wasn't working or why I'd failed uni for that, you know, that semester, and would just sort of steer the narrative around the fact that I was actually struggling and, you know, wasn't working or wasn't leaving the house much, wasn't eating healthy. So it was definitely a change in my normal behaviours that I wasn't even cognitively aware of, but others around me were.
Yeah. And I think what's so incredible about this and so important to anyone listening is that often people are worried to ask a friend how they're going or point something out, like, you know, I've noticed this change in you, because they're maybe worried that they're going to offend or that they're not going to have the perfect thing to say or they're not going to know how to fix it. But it's like listening to what you just said, and it's the same in my own journey. I don't know where I would have been if I hadn't had those people reach out and say those things, and the persistent friends who checked in on you even when you haven't answered the phone the last 7 times they've called. So, like, that's a huge takeaway from this conversation, I think, is just to encourage people to reach out.
And you don't need to have the answers. It's not like, oh, I'm here to save you or rescue you. Mm-hmm. It's just, hey, let's have a chat. Or let's not even have a chat. Let's just go for a walk.
Yes.
Let's just go to the beach. Let's just get a coffee. I'm not going to mention anything about the 7 missed phone calls,
yeah,
the fact you haven't caught up in a month, whatever. Let's just do some easy, gentle movement. You know what? And I'm going to drop in again next Sunday.
Yeah. And often, like, just to know that someone has thought of you or thought of us, yeah, in that kind of moment can make all the difference as well.
That could be the highlight of your week, really. And there's been so many times where a really simple gesture has been so crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only one thing I encourage people, yeah, each week, just try and be one person's, like, highlight.
Yeah.
Like, simple. Doesn't have to be complex. A text message.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, simple things.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to let someone know you've been thinking of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Very easy to do. So obviously you mentioned that your sister had started to notice some changes in you. This was in the first year of uni.
Yeah, so early 20s, yeah, I'd be back then, yeah.
What was next?
Yeah, so I would have seen a counsellor originally, sort of early on. I think it was even through the hospital provided a counsellor. And it was this really cool dude, I remember, because he was into running.
Okay.
And he said to me, I think it was a Canadian guy. It was really cool. He's like, Mark, you should, like, get moving and start running. Mm-hmm. So I actually did. And, like, in many ways, running was my self-medication there for a while. And it was easy to do. And I started really slow, really gently. So that was sort of this positive thing I could do.
Mm-hmm.
There was a sense of connection and community as well.
So you're part of a group?
Yeah, I was. Nice. I was doing the South Australian Roadrunners,
okay,
fun runs, Barossa Valley 10K and Victor Harbour and,
yeah,
Green Belt Marathon and those sort of things. So that was really encouraging to get that support. And I probably just weaved my way through those early 20s. I was working again. Went back and studied again, and that was pretty good until my mid-20s, where, yeah, I just couldn't get it together.
Mm-hmm.
How did that look? Couldn't get it together was probably those demons came back, certainly that darkness, like depression. It was, mm-hmm, yeah, I went to the doctor and didn't ever go. I think I took medication for 2 weeks,
mm-hmm,
and it didn't sit well within my system, but yeah, I gave it a go,
yeah,
and I was fine with that. So gave that a go, and then, yeah, just sort of wondered and got a bit lost, and there would have been a good couple of years where I was working on and off. I was doing some work as a painter I was helping out just sort of like odd jobs to keep things going, but not in a great headspace.
Mm-hmm.
No, it never got so dark that I thought about taking my own life or anything, but definitely disconnected. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's what, for me, when I look back on it now, zero level of community, not reaching out to anyone, just no sense of connection to anything outside
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah.
So isolated.
Yeah, super isolated. Yeah. And as humans, we're not supposed to be isolated. Never. We're pack animals, right?
100%.
So that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And I remember I moved to Sydney. It was probably the when my turnaround happened,
mm-hmm.
my cousin Ben, who was living in Sydney, just said, "Why don't you come to Sydney?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Why don't I go to Sydney?" I had no reason not to. And it was almost this jolt to my brain to go, I could just drop everything and try again somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I did. And that was amazing fun. I lived in Coogee down by the beach and worked
in a
bottle shop in Bondi and in Wallara and had all these big Sydney events, New Year's Eve and things. That was amazing, and it got me out of my own rut, essentially, because I was in a rut, yeah. And that, I remember my 30th birthday. Oh, it was the most lonely. I think I invited some friends I was working with, and I think like four people rocked up, you mm-hmm. know, and I was like, oh, wow. I was thought at, you know, this stage would have friends and family, and yeah, it really shook me then. I felt so isolated in this big town of Sydney, so lonely. And sort of from there on in, I was like, I think I'm going to move back to Adelaide and start on this journey of rediscovery.
Amazing. Would you say that that was like probably the darkest point, or your lowest point is probably a nicer way to say it?
Yeah. Certainly there were times in Sydney where I reckon there was two people that even knew I existed in Sydney, like my cousin and my boss at work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, wow, how's that? How have I come to be here? And in many ways, like, Sydney's stunning. Like, could you? I'd walk along the beachfront, swim in the ocean, yeah. And it was like paradise. But there was this hole within me that, like, nothing was filling up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that, yeah, it was disconnected. I had zero community there. And like anywhere, certainly in Sydney, it is clicky because it's so big, so transient. People protect their little friendships. Yeah. And I get that. So maybe I didn't help myself by not trying a bit harder. But, yeah, certainly around that point, and even before I left for Sydney, it was like, yeah, some really – I had months where it wasn't working, really just dark and heavy. It was like thinking through fog.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like every thought was like foggy and I couldn't get that fog out of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, sometimes it was just day to day, like walking around the block and cooking dinner.
Yeah.
Was the highlight.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think sometimes when we're in that kind of state, like it's very, like you might know what the right things to do are. Like, you know that you should be getting some fresh air and, you know, moving your body and eating well, and you know those things, but it can be very difficult, especially when you're in those really low moments when the depression has got its claws into you to do those things, because it's just too overwhelming. And I think that, yeah, it's being able to try and get through that and knowing that, I guess, just by adding the small things in here and there, it's going to sort of help turn it around.
100%. Mm. And some days, yeah, it might have been checking the letterbox.
Yes.
And I might have bumped into my neighbour, gave him a wave,
mm-hmm.
come back inside. Or mum might have popped over to visit, or my sister. So something as simple as that can just be the, did it today. Let's do it tomorrow. And it was that slow accumulation of a good day,
mm-hmm.
to a good week, to a good month, to, oh, I've got that sense of me back, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
that led then to being able to eat a bit healthier or move a little bit more or catch up with that person. Like that slowly just got momentum building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that momentum just led to better decisions. And yeah, now like there's a lot of momentum going, and it's a daily habit now that I look after certain things in my life.
Yeah. And I think that's really good to highlight is that, you know, it is often the little things, the daily additions of those little things that contribute to our mental health the same way that it is with physical health. It's the day-to-day, the things that we do, the accumulation of good habits that give us the good physical health. It's the same with mental health.
But I've got some non-negotiables, and it's always morning time, like that morning habit of stretching. I catch up with mate on Tuesday, we do a bit of a workout and we get a coffee afterwards. Wednesdays I go running, catch up with a whole bunch of mates at Banaldinga Beach. We go for a swim, go for a nice long walk, get a coffee afterwards, and it's all done before work.
Yeah.
Before my day, I've even faced any challenge there, I've dunked myself in the ocean in August and survived.
Yes. You know,
and the coffee never tastes better
than
after a freezing cold ocean swim.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the norm. That's been my baseline, and it is non-negotiables. And sometimes I'll slip off that habit.
Mm-hmm.
And mates will say, "Hey, Mark, where you been?" Or I'll say to them, "Hey, what's going on?" And, yep, I'll be back next week. So it's that accountability. And it comes back to community.
Absolutely, yeah. What are the other things that you do to take care of your mental health now?
Yeah, certainly all that morning routine that I certainly just mentioned. There's also a connection to community. Like, how do I engage or give back mm-hmm. to people I live with? We've got a street library at home.
Oh, nice.
The most simple little, it's a cupboard with books, and, you know, we're just these custodians because the street owns it. Like
mm-hmm.
kids come in, they leave little trinkets, and families come, mums read books to their children, and like it's the most lovely engagement. And mm-hmm. for us to go and connect with people that come and use it, beautiful. Just going for coffee, you know, at the coffee shop, and knowing the two old blokes that sit at the front and having a chat and checking in with them and patting their dog. Yeah, but this morning I went for a walk and a swim with some mates, and there was dogs down there, and there's people's kids, and this really healthy mix of people.
Mm-hmm.
And just that little check-in, you might know them from all different areas, but that's Mark, I know him, I know a bit about him, and vice versa, I check in with them. So having a real tangible connection,
mm-hmm.
I was connected to the Fleurieu Future Leaders program,
mm-hmm.
which is program that basically encourages leadership on the Fleurieu Peninsula. And there's 140 alumni there, so there's always bumping into people. So it's trying to, for me, it's connecting to mm-hmm. those little strings, this like web of things in my community that hold me.
Yeah, and it's that sense of purpose, I think, that's really important. The sense of purpose alongside the the being of service.
Yes.
To others, which is something that's really important for myself as well.
100%. And I remember I had this magical year. I was working in a winery, K Brothers in McLaren Vale. It was 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the vintage beforehand. Then I ended up staying on in the winery, which was largely vineyard work through winter. And I'd be out there with about three others, all winter, like pruning, fixing, irrigation, just being outdoors. And mm-hmm. I remember my thoughts were so expansive because I remember pruning in the hail. It was freezing cold and, you know, your fingers were numb. But it was this year of like just exploring my ideas. Like, I didn't have a phone to answer in my day, and it was simple. But the conversations, and it really opened up, because I realised I wasn't on purpose, mm-hmm. essentially, is what happened. So I pretty much gave up sort of working at K Brothers, ended up enrolling at Norlunga TAFE in doing youth work. I'd never studied at TAFE, never done any service-based sort of study. And there I was down in Noarlunga, yeah, in this room full of, like, most of them were younger than I was. I was like mid-30s
mm-hmm.
and sort of had to redefine, because I was Mark from K Brothers. I was this wine industry dude.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm just some guy sitting in a TAFE classroom learning about, you know, young people.
Mm-hmm.
But it set me on fire in many ways. Like, my brain was just like thinking and challenging, and mm-hmm. my purpose just was like, yeah, I want to work supporting young people.
Mm-hmm. And what a great purpose to have. Like, and it's interesting, you know, you mentioned, you know, I had this identity, and it was Mark, and I worked at K Brothers,
yep.
and it's almost like people think you can only have one or the other. Or, you know, but you can wear multiple hats. I wear so many hats.
It's healthy.
Yeah, you can, you know, I can be Lisa who works as a coffee rep, and Lisa who produces this podcast, and Lisa who does bodybuilding competitions. Like, you can wear as many hats as you can manage to wear.
and I would say that all of those different versions of Lisa make each one stronger.
Mm, absolutely.
And inform other parts of your life, because they're not separate.
No, you're one person.
You might have the best, deep and meaningful mental health conversations with the person you're selling coffee to or something,
mm.
because they know you're a safe person to talk to.
Absolutely.
And you can't just take off that hat. Mm. And I've found, like, as clear as anything, is that the more I bring those different skills and those different hats to just be, well, this is who I am, the more aligned I am,
mm.
that's when the magic starts to happen.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. Like, I think this is a tangent now, I think, but like, I feel like for myself anyway, and maybe you'll agree, but growing up, I always felt the need, like, I had to be less so that I would fit in. So, like, you know, I wouldn't want to fully express myself in many different ways because I should just be like everybody else. And it's taken me to now, I'm now in my mid-30s, to finally feel as though I'm, like, I won't say feel like I'm safe, it's safe enough to just be who I am, but I think I've learnt how to love myself enough and appreciate myself enough to just be who I am, because the people that matter will love me that way. And if someone has a problem with it, it's not my problem. So I think that's, yeah, I think for a lot of people, I think in this kind of generation as well, like, they're all starting to come out the other end.
Yeah. and Lisa, by you doing that, you're empowering mm. others. You're empowering that next generation to go, it's okay to be me. It's okay to bring my gifts forth and to light up this space that I'm working in, because you not bringing your gifts to the world is not doing anyone any favours.
Yeah.
But that can be a hard, windy road.
Yes.
To get to, because I was the same. I was mid-30s by the time I got to really start to hit my straps, and it's amazing. And I'm sure people are drawn to you mm-hmm. and are asking, oh, how did you start this? How did you do that? And you're naturally going to mentor and guide the next generation of, mm-hmm. of people to find what their gifts are and to bring them forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it does take that. Like, for me, it's taken a lot of self-work and, yeah, you know, learning to love yourself and doing the work behind the scenes.
It's all work behind the scenes. I spent a year with a good mate, Forte, doing this. It's called No More Mr. Nice Guy. Mm-hmm. And it's a sort of this book, essentially. And because I was very much the nice guy. Yep, I won't put my needs first. I'll just do everything for everyone else, make sure they're happy. But underneath, I am regretting it. I'm mm. angry that I'm not getting opportunities. I won't ask for what I need, and was hopeless. I was really struggling. So I had to look at all of these scripts and narratives. And one of them was like play small, like, don't be too big, make sure you don't get noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And was that an outdated feature? Mm, sounds like you can relate.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, what I find interesting is like, okay, so now we've identified that you're doing that, then it's the further delving into why. And so much of it comes back to childhood. which we were talking about earlier as well. So it's just very interesting when you start doing that self-discovery and looking into like, okay, why do I do the things that I do now?
And I was so unaware of all of these decisions that I was making and choices, just blind to the script and the narrative that I was reading from, and it really was not serving me.
Mm.
And that's a lot of that self-work. I went away and did a bunch of sort of like men's weekends and sharing stuff, and went to New South Wales and did some awesome camps up in Mullumbimby with Anna Rubenstein around rites of passage, and learned so much about me. And out of that came this confidence and this probably more clarity and, yeah, just really okay with how I was meeting the world. And since that's happened, yeah, there's been this momentum and momentum, and like, I wouldn't dream about half the things I'm doing now, certainly not in my mid-20s
when it was like... Yeah, I agree.
Like the letterbox was the highlight of the day, you know? So, yeah, it's been a journey, but, yeah, it's one I'm certainly following and one I want to help others.
Yes. Yeah. And I love that. Once you have some knowledge, like once we have some knowledge, it's nice to obviously be able to pass that on. And I can remember being a teenager thinking like 30s was old, or like, you know, that like life's over by that stage. And now I'm like 30s onwards is where it's at. Like, this is a good time.
100%. And imagine, you know, I'm in my mid-40s now and I'm loving it.
Yeah.
But who knows what I might learn in my mid-60s.
I know.
You know, or mid-80s or whatever that. You know, we've all got those stories, and I think it's really important to honour and respect those that have gone before us, that have laid the path. And I've got so many mentors that have guided and supported me to get to where I am, and I love sitting next to those men and women. They have seen me. They've seen me down here struggling, and now they're celebrating me up here sort of having some wins.
So obviously we both think that community and connection is very important. To someone who might be listening and isn't sure how to maybe find their community, or, you know, open a door into their community, what advice might you have for them?
I would keep it really simple. If there's something that you enjoy, gaming, motorbikes, fashion, whatever it is, walking, like park run is the classic example of simple community engagement. I'm lucky enough to live right near the Aldingawan. It's amazing. And it's just people there that gather regularly to walk and run.
Yeah. So you don't have to run. You can
walk. You can absolutely walk.
Mm-hmm.
But you can volunteer. Mm-hmm. And so you've got that sense of giving back. And someone might know your name there. And you might see that same person week after week, and then you go back and have a coffee. So it's finding something really easy and accessible. It is going to feel uncomfortable. It's being okay with that little bit of discomfort. Just name it. Whew, this is okay. Bring a friend is probably a really good thing to do, just to get past that awkwardness. But there are so many ways to catch up and connect. Car clubs, men sheds, you name it. Just go to your regular bakery for a coffee and you'll eventually get to know someone.
Yeah, like the people working there, the baristas, you know, you go to your local cafe once or twice a week and sit there, you'll get to know the people who work there, and that is still a form of connection.
100%. They are the front line,
Hospitality workers are the MVP of connection.
Yeah, they are, and they're good at it. And bar staff and anyone that works in that service hospitality area, they don't probably realise it or get paid accordingly, but they are vital. They are vital.
Yeah, I definitely think, find an activity that you enjoy and then find a group of people who do that activity together. And once you start looking for it, there's so much opportunity. And like you said, it can be a little bit scary at first, but I also just try to think and remind myself that there's other people in the same, you know, shoes as me. Like there's other people who might be turning up on their own and they're a bit nervous, and, you know, all you've got to be able to do is talk about yourself and ask somebody about themselves. Like that's, you know, again, I know I can understand it's nerve-wracking, but you know yourself.
Yeah.
Like, and just ask what you might like to be asked in return.
Yeah.
So I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves all the time, but it's just, yeah, about taking a little bit of a leap of faith and putting yourself out there.
And working in a school, like that, I see that every single day. We just recently had all of our year sixes that are transitioning into year seven next year. So we're 270 11-year-olds rock up to school. And if you want to see a mix of, like, excitement, fear, anxiety, like, first day of high school, that is pretty much the pinnacle of anyone's, like, am I going to be okay? Yet they're so brave and so trusting and such a beautiful age to see them struggle and make friends and be okay. And, you know, it can feel awkward because they're all growing and they're different sizes and heights, but they still show up. Like they show, and they come back. It's that bravery is, I'm always blown away by the courage of young people because they don't even sort of know who they are as an individual yet. They're still working that out. And they're just starting that journey of, well, I'm not my parents, I'm not my family, so who am I? Mm-hmm. Who am I going to make friends with? Do I think it's okay to go and do that thing at school?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a rocky road, but it's so amazing to witness students go through it, yeah.
Yeah, and I think at times we can all, you know, take a leaf out of the book of, you know, this age range, because if you think about kids are just fearless. Right? Like a great example of this was that I bought roller skates during COVID lockdown. Yep. So I moved back from Indonesia. I needed something to do. And I was so scared because I'm like, I know if I fall over, I could hurt myself. Whereas as children, you just don't have that fear instilled in you yet. And so at times I try to remind myself, okay, what would, you know, 11-year-old me, like how would she have handled this situation? And would she have just gone in not caring what anyone's going to think and just given it a go?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, we can take a little something from that.
it's that constant unknown but stepping into that discomfort. And, like their bodies and brains are going so much through so much change. Even if they don't want to change, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's something nice about being an adult where at least you sort of know the even keel you might be on. But with young people, it's like, I'm going to grow a foot in the next year and all of a sudden have all these hormones and have massive shoulders and like things are changing. So they're like getting used to their limbs being longer.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's such an awkward, like I do love the awkwardness of it at times. And, but then, yeah, it's a beautiful thing to witness.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest things that you're seeing kids come up against in the schooling system? Yeah. Well, not necessarily with the schooling system, but within that age.
Certainly within that age, you know, if we look at that middle school, you know, year 7, 8, 9, that's when you really start to become that individual, really start to shift your attention from your family to your friends, and your friends are everything. And you can't bear to be alone from them, and why aren't I in the same class as them? And, like, yeah, there's some girls who will just sort of wait for their friends at the crossing and, like, hug, like, this, I haven't seen you, you know, in a day, and it's so lovely and wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly it's all about connection, and if you don't have that connection or you're, you know, more isolated, or I think the big one, especially for girls, is navigating through conflict within a friendship group or actually, I don't want to be friends with these people anymore. Like, that's a large chunk of, you know, the work we do is supporting students just to navigate through that because it is a superpower.
Mm.
Like, if you can learn to shift friend groups or have different friend groups, the best thing ever. Certainly boys, they're a little bit, I mean, even neurologically, they're a bit behind the girls at that age. So they're still often in, I just want to run and use my body. You know, and it's beautiful because they're always like touching and hugging and pushing and headlocks and, you know, and they're just mucking around. It's such a lovely, there's a lovely intimacy with friends, like young boys, mm-hmm. because slowly as they, you know, sort of become more men, like that is weaned out of them. And, I might be gay if I touch my mate. So that's the last thing you want to ever be accused of being at high school. So this connection between men slowly drifts to this more, we've got to have this bro, like put downs. And it's such a shame. Because I think men really want that connection still, and hence like sports are so good because they do get to be close and you know, hug your mates if you score a goal or something. But yeah, there's something missing for the blokes to not have that connection. Yeah, sort of continue through into adulthood.
Yeah, that's quite interesting actually, the difference. But as you explain, like neurologically as well, you know. It is different between the boys and the girls.
It's hilarious. Like the year, say year seven girls will be a foot taller than the boys. Like they're taller. They look like adults, and the young little boys that haven't quite hit puberty yet are just, they look like children still. But some of the girls are like, we're adults.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, sort of by year 10, that sort of catches up and they're sort of on the same level again.
Amazing. So back to yourself and your journey, I guess, like what would you like say to someone or say to yourself, I guess, looking back with a bit of reflection, what sort of advice would you have for yourself or someone who might be going through something similar to what you did?
I would give sort of mid 20 mark the advice of, one day at a time, just take one day at a time. I certainly would often catastrophize the future and be quite negative about it. So just really take one small step each day, and then the next day do one positive small step, the next day another one. So break it down into really small bite-sized chunks. Movement was a crucial one for me. I needed movement. That really in many ways helped me feel better about myself. So if you could put in some sort of movement, walking is movement. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be marathons.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd say movement, you know, if you could eat healthy, you know, maybe avoid, if you know there's things that don't mix well with you, drugs, alcohol, whatever, limit those things, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, try and find some space of connection.
Mm-hmm.
Each day, and it can be tiny, tiny, tiny. And if you could reach out of your own life and maybe just be that positive message in someone else's day, do that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. What about society? What do you reckon society could do better in the mental health space?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. When I think of, we always talk about self-care, but I think it's collective care we need to really get better at. Because we can have, self-care is great if I've got a safe street to live on and the house I'm living in is a safe place and I've got parks to exercise in. But if you don't have access to those things, self-care is just a word.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we get better at collective care, community care, you know, parkrun being a great example, those sort of elements, community spaces, libraries, supporting each community, supporting its own, I suppose, and providing opportunities for people of all different backgrounds and walks of life and ages to find a common place just to be seen, and especially for young people to have, often it's skate parks or, you know, things where they actually want to hang out. And if you've got a space young people can go to in your community, you're going to feel way more connected to it. And if you have some sort of ownership of it, you're going to use it and look after it. And I think young people have been marginalised in a lot of those spaces. Besides your shopping centre, where else can you go when you're 14? You know, there's not a lot going on.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because I'm trying to think back to myself and, you know, I grew up not far from here, so close to Semaphore, which is close to the beach for anyone who's not from Adelaide. So I can remember we would, like me and my girlfriends, we'd go for a walk to semaphore where there's like the jetty or pier, depending wherever you're from, and like a grassed space. And we would go and hang out there. There is a skate park there, but we didn't normally go there. But it's, yeah, interesting to think, okay, where did we go? It was there or it was the mall, like the shopping centre, or at someone's house. That's interesting. I've never really thought about it before.
Yeah, and often it's that age where you want to interact with people. Mm. Like, hence the shopping centre, the mall is the obvious place to go because there's other people. And you want to sort of, who are they? What do they think of us? You know, you want to have
run
that.
Run into people.
And it's the social time. So you want to work, you want to figure that out. So you want to be around others, but in a safe place. If you're too young for nightclubs or city life, you know, there's not that many opportunities.
Mm. Yeah, I can remember getting to that sort of age and we would always go to like Westlakes
Mall. Same, yeah.
Thursday night shopping. And it'd be like, you'd get there and Mum would be like, well, meet me back at Boost Juice in 1 hour. And then you'd go off with your friend for an hour walking around and looking in shops and like meeting people. And yeah, it's very, that was funny thinking about that.
And those like, that's crucial at that age. Crucial. Mm. Yeah. And to be, I'm like, what am I going to wear? And what are we going to wear? We've got to have matching things.
Yeah. I know. But yeah, those years are definitely very important as well. So to come back to restored connections, do you want to just talk us through a little bit more about that in terms of where the idea came from, where it started?
Yeah, it started with me working with young people at schools. And people in my community would say, hey, Mark, I know you work with young people. Can you come and chat to my son, my daughter? And from that, it got this momentum that started around, hey, Mark, we're having some issues. Could you come and, you know, hold a family conversation? Mm-hmm. So out of that, I started Restored Connection as a way of keeping families connected along that teenage journey. And it's going to be a long, bumpy, up and down journey. Mm-hmm. Young people need to take risks. They need to explore themselves. They're going to not look to their parents as the font of all wisdom. And probably the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
My parents know nothing all of a sudden. And I'm going to explore the world and I'm going to have mistakes and trip up. So it's navigating that space and helping families to navigate that space through healthy communication, through some good routines, through talking about what's really working here well and having those daring conversations around, hey, what's not working well?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about a young person saying, I hate when you make me do the dishes. And it might be mum saying, hey, I don't like when you get home and you yell at me and slam the door, because mums and dads are humans as well, which, you know, can be quite a shift in thinking.
Yeah.
For a young person.
Yeah.
To realise that, yeah, parents have got emotions and feelings and they might not want to pick you up from basketball at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's having those conversations and, putting some supports in place. But it's also about sharing stories. Like, young people need to hear the stories of their parents when they were 12-year-olds, when they were 14-year-olds. How did you navigate your first boyfriend or girlfriend or your first job? Like, they are the stories that young people will do anything to hear. They might not act cool when they're hearing it because it might be super cringe, but I bet your young person will just be like, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I always ask young people, like, who's one of your heroes? And 95% will say either their mum or their dad. The other 5% is often Kobe Bryant or Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
So you're in good company if you're not one of those parents. But they might see their parents struggling, supporting them. And I always say, do you ever tell them? And they're like, oh, no, I can't. I never, like, too cringe, too, you know. But they notice. They notice the effort and energy parents put in and the love they give them, even if they don't necessarily show it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one thing that's interesting when I think back to when I was a teenager and now being an adult, that you do sometimes forget that the parent is just another human being and that they're just trying to navigate life as well. And I think, like, the example I always think of is, like, you know, I'd come home from school and my mum's just finished a whole day at work and it's, oh, what's for dinner? And she might say, I don't know, spaghetti bolognese. And I would be like, ugh, like mad at her because that's not what I wanted to have for dinner. And she's just worked a whole day. She now has to cook for the family of five and I'm now whinging about the meal that's being prepared for me. Like things like that that as a teenager or as a child you don't consider.
No.
You know, and, you know, I think it would have been beneficial to me at that time to have had someone say, hey, mum's just another human.
Yeah.
She's got, you know, only so many hours in the day as well. Make 100%. Your own dinner if you want something else.
And it builds empathy and understanding around others. And often siblings and parents are the first place you get to test your empathy with others. And there's no better, you know, learning place to have that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to be able to, yeah, see mum or dad as a human.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, yeah, I think in those teen years, it's when you start to develop that mm-hmm. different connection, that different relationship to your parents, because things are shifting. And the ultimate aim is to have children leave the home as really well, healthily adjusted adults. And mm-hmm. not needing you, like that's what you're preparing them for.
Yeah.
Independence.
Yeah.
So by just rescuing them or doing everything for them, that's not going to set them up for a very successful life at all.
Yeah. So you are working with families now in the homes?
Yeah, I do. So I come to families' homes. Yeah. One of the barriers for young people in engaging with any service is, do I have to go to an office or this sterile,
you know, clinical
setting? Mm. So I did it really deliberately to go to the family setting and in their safe space, often with a lot of younger students or younger teenagers, tweens, they need to move. Like one of the best things I had, we were having a chat at a dinner table as the 10-year-old son was skateboarding around the kitchen.
Yeah.
And it was perfect because he was totally engaged in the conversation, but he could use his body and he was absolutely listening. But to say, sit there, sit still and listen was never going to work. Trampolines, best places to have conversations.
Okay.
Monkey bars. Yeah. You ever set a monkey bars? Magic happens. So it's trying to capture what's age appropriate and best for that family. Obviously, if they're a little bit older, that's sort of more 15, 16, 17, they will sit down, you know, on a seat for 45 minutes, an hour and engage. As long as they're being heard. And the really important thing is that they get their voice heard.
Yeah.
And if they have that space, they're not interrupted, they're not judged, often young people won't know what's going to happen in life until something's gone wrong. Mm-hmm. You almost need to know what's going to happen. If I disappoint mum or break a rule, I need to know how they're going to respond.
Because
if they don't, then I'm going to be on eggshells and anxious about it.
Mm-hmm.
But at least if you can be really clear to say, hey, these are the expectations of our house. These are our family values. If something does go wrong, this is what we're probably going to have.
Yeah.
And not just a punitive punishment element, because that might be, you might lose access to your phone or whatever it is, but to go, we're actually going to have a conversation around this and we can chat about what you're thinking at the time, who's been impacted, you know, what do you need to do to fix that with someone? That is that more relational, restorative approach that leads to protecting the relationship as key, because that's the bit you want to get through intact. Choices and behaviours might not be great, but they're not a bad person at the core.
Yeah. That sounds absolutely incredible. And I feel like there'd be so many people that would, you know, get something out of working with you. If anyone would like to find some information about the business, how can they find you?
Yeah, they can certainly go to the website, which is restoredconnection.com.au. You can, all the information is on there. You can have a look through there. You can send me a message.
Mm-hmm.
We can have a chat. We can talk about what's happening in your family, seeing if that fits right, and then we can start working together.
Amazing.
Also on Insta and Facebook, you can find me on socials, Restored Connection.
Beautiful. And I'll put all of that in the show notes for the episode as well, so anyone can find you, or that you, if for some reason you can't find it through any of those ways, just reach out to me and I'll be able to pop you over to Mark. So that's all good. Well, that has been honestly a really wonderful conversation. I feel like you and I could probably talk for hours on end about a million different things. But I feel like there's going to be a lot of people out there who are going to take something really valuable from different parts of this episode as well. I just want to mention again how important I believe like community and connection is. It sounds like there's a great one down at Aldinga. When I get my dream house down there, I'm coming to join you in that community. For now, I'm in the community in the 5016. But I just wanted to say a massive thank you. This episode has been in the works for quite a while, and we got here. That was all on me. But it's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you for sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, and your time with me on this Saturday.
It's been so good. Thanks for having me, Lisa. And I love the work you do in the mental health space. It's so important around stories, stories, stories.
Mm, yeah, beautiful. Well, thank you. And thanks, guys, for tuning in once again. And I will see you next week. Dewey.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit the subscribe button and leave me a 5-star review. Even better, if you know someone who might benefit from listening to it, please tell them all about it. You'll find more information from today's episode in the show notes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on High Tide, Low Tide, please email me at Lisa, spelled L-E-E-S-A, at hightidelowtideau.com, or DM me on Instagram at hightidelowtideau. See you next time.